welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Right, hello, welcome to episode 307 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal and here in the flesh, Sean Orford. You right?
I'm here in the flesh. I'm stunning and I'm amazing. I've got a bit of Qatari cough because I get it flying backwards and forwards. I think part of it is the sand, and part of it is the those viruses that they happily recycle round and around the aircraft.
It's a healthy place to be in it.
Yeah, so yeah. If someone's got a virus on an aircraft, by the time you land, everyone's got it. Mm. You know, it's going round and round.
Hey, yeah. It's the world we live in.
They used to say that the air quality in an aeroplane was better when people smoked, because the people would sit at the back of the plane when they smoked, they would be pumping in fresh, clean air. And now they just recycle the air.
Oh, right, okay.
So,
is there, how far are we? 35,000 feet? Is there not any air to actually draw up there from the atmosphere?
I don't know how far up you go. I mean, we're up at over 40,000 a lot of the time.
Everest's like 32,000 feet, is it?
Yeah.
8,000 metres?
People have problems there, don't they?
Yeah, you do. Anyway, we're not talking about oxygen levels in the stratosphere today. We're talking about misery and sadness and whether or not people actually like that and why some people resist change and why they maybe perhaps we kind of are comforted by our sadness sometimes and we don't want to let go of it. So I'll chat more about why we're talking about that in a sec. liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website. Sean's written a blog post for this post. For this podcast, all previous episodes are available there as well. If you just search for something, some kind of issue you've had or experiencing, there's a likelihood we've talked about it at length, maybe on multiple occasions in the last few years. So have a look and do sign up to the mailing list, and you'll get some free meditation files, which I have stubbornly resisted to use because I don't want to change and have to meditate every day. Do you still meditate daily, Sean? It's just part of your routine?
I do. It's like cleaning my teeth.
But could you change your habits and not meditate anymore?
I could.
Why don't you?
Because I don't want it.
So what have you been up to, man? How was Qatar?
It was very, very hot. Mm-hmm. 38 degrees, quite humid. And when I came back, I was expecting to come back to kind of like less than 10 degrees.
Yeah.
And we'd whacked into a little heat wave, hadn't we?
And lo and behold.
Yeah. So it was in the 20s.
21, 22, 23 over the weekend, Easter weekend.
Yeah.
Very pleasant.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what the average is for that cat this time of year, but...
No, it was hotter, wasn't it? Because there's been, like, wildfires and things in parts of the country because that's that hot.
Yes.
Relatively.
But back to reality this week, I think it's getting cooler and wetter and all that stuff, just the way we like it in the
UK. Well, I was going to use my bike today, but I've got to start a new mindfulness course tonight, so I was thinking I couldn't actually fit all that in and do that. So I was thinking, okay, next time I'll be out and about will be Friday, and the forecast is it's going to be pouring with rain. Now, the thing is, you're a wet-weather cyclist, aren't you?
I'm an all-weather cyclist, yeah, man. Snow, rain, wind. Wind's the worst, to be honest, because it just buffets you around.
Yeah.
Really strong wind. I don't mind the rain too much. Just change clothes when you get to the other end. Easy.
Yeah. So I'm going to try... I've got to do some stuff down at the factories on Friday, so I'm going to try and do bike then.
Good lad.
See how we go.
Be the change.
I want to discover that bike route that goes around the back of Port Sunlight... and goes right the way around to Bromborough.
Oh, yeah, that's a beautiful little path.
Yeah, I want to discover that one.
Beautiful, it's kind of a bit overgrown in parts, so it needs a bit of TLC, the actual surface, but really good route, that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, so that's my discovery for Friday, I hope.
Yeah. All right, let me know how you get on. Obviously I'm talking about bicycles all the time, and I was at the town hall in Wallasey chatting to some... bots there, some high-powered bots about biking and environment and what we're going to have to do in the coming years. And then I had this, I've made this little video of William's ride to school. I've been recording from
Which is brilliant, that's a brilliant video.
From his rucksack for about 6 months. To stubbornly, I've been riding with a tiny little boy on the road, on a residential road, which is normally very quiet, but in the morning it comes alive with traffic and impatient and people, but busy people, you know, that are off somewhere in a rush, and they're confronted with this six-year-old boy on a bike. And they kind of finish. I think they're kind of used to seeing him now. They give him waves and they thumbs up and all that stuff. But the video is quite powerful and it kicked off on Twitter in a way that I was hoping for, but not fully expecting. I copied in a few key cycling and like, healthy environmental activists.
But you've had a bit of earache because you don't wear a helmet.
Right, yeah. Well, on Twitter, largely, it was very positive stuff going on and, you know, praising Will for being brave. Like, you should be brave to get on a bike and go to school. Crazy. Or, you know, praising me for kind of forcing the issue a little bit. But, yeah, you know, one or two comments. You don't see William in the video. You just see from his perspective on his rucksack. He's not wearing a helmet most of the time. Although, at the end, there is a little shot of him, thumbs up, which I had to reshoot with him with a helmet on because the police were like, we want to use the video, but he's got to be wearing a helmet. Just, we're sorry. Anyway, but I'm not wearing a helmet in it, so I get a little bit of stick. You know, I'm cruising around at like 6-7 miles an hour.
And there were people that thought you should be in prison for taking a child on the road.
One commenter on the newspaper article thought I should be in jail for... If that's what it takes, yeah, I'll go to jail.
Okay, like, bye. I'll bring you some sandwiches.
But yeah, no, it's quite interesting being a minor Twitter celebrity for a few days over the weekend. Like, notifications coming in, like, nobody's business. But will it actually, will it change minds? Will it have the impact of having more people walking or scooting or riding to school? I don't know. Let's have a look. Let's see.
But that whole idea of change is something that's so hot in the news, isn't it? So we've got our little girl, 16-year-old.
She's not our girl.
Well, she's the
world.
The planet.
She was gifted to everyone by the universe. Yeah, yeah. Greta Thunberg.
Yeah. And she's out there saying we need to change. Mm. And interestingly, I have to say this out loud, Theresa May refused to meet her. How embarrassing is that? I think that's bizarre.
It's crazy. I mean, they're really good. Yeah. I mean, whether she's just afraid of being lectured by the 16-year-old that's way more clued up on the science.
But doesn't it make her look such a stupid woman? I mean, to actually avoid that, is how embarrassing is that? That's our leader, that is. That is embarrassing.
It is. I know Michael Gove was their environment secretary on that panel of people talking to her, but yeah, you've got to meet her, man. She's a powerful force now, but she's frustrated because you can sense in her voice as she does these big speeches at parliaments and councils, and that she's frustrated because even though she's out there making a huge difference and getting a lot of coverage, I don't think she sees any actual change coming yet. And you've got to ask the question, what does it take for people to change? Not just on the environmental front, but in our lives. Is it serious amounts of discomfort and pain that we need?
Well, I mean, I come down to the thing that it's like, I see two reasons why people change. One is through awareness, as in people are starting to realise things need to change. And the other one is pain, where they've suffered so much they don't have any choice, right? And you came up with something that came up with a third one here, didn't you? Which is the third one, they said, well, they got tired of always doing the same thing. And I think that one you probably see when people go through what we call a midlife crisis, where suddenly everything goes up in the air and they go for change in a big way. Mm-hmm. But overall, I don't think people generally want to change.
Yeah, well, this came about not because of the environmental stuff and the stuff I think about all the time. I was chatting to a lady here, Joelle, who is a massage therapist and she does all sorts of cool stuff and healing. And I'll put a link to her website in the show notes. If you're in Birkenhead, come and try her out, especially the cryogenic massage. Mm. She kind of sprays you with this liquid nitrogen and activates the nerve endings and all that stuff. Really cool. Anyway, we were chatting about with someone that I've met from the council in public health, talking about, and he works on quite large, you know, smoking cessation projects, that kind of thing, and he's a bit exacerbated in the amount of effort it takes for people to change, even if you present them with all the right material, all the evidence, this, that, and the other, they still don't want to change. And Joelle was saying, and I think she's right actually, that people don't want to change because they're happy in their sadness in some kind of ways, and they have it, it's like a bit of a warm, cosy blanket they have to retreat to.
I don't know that happiness is the right word. I think it's more like habituation. You know, that people get used to it. So that thing about someone kicks you up the arse every 15 minutes, day in, day out, year in, year out, and then they stop, you're likely to go and find someone else kick you up the arse so you feel normal. Yeah? Do we have that kind of normality?
Yeah, so habits and routine are immensely powerful things, aren't they?
Yeah.
These mad little crazy routines we have in our lives.
Even when they seem really negative. I mean, why would somebody choose to self-harm?
Yeah.
But they do, and for them it makes sense. Outside, you think, oh my God, why would you do that? From inside, it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know?
When you're speaking to people that are self-harming or have, you know, being victims of domestic abuse, and they've come to you for help, how often do they actually get to the stage where they've changed, or do they...
But what you have to realise is the self-harm bit isn't the problem. The self-harm is the symptom of an inner cause. You have to solve the inner cause. It's like people that overeat and then they diet. It's not the diet that's the issue. It's the inner person that is making them eat. Mm-hmm. It says resolving that inner issue. And the things that we see as behaviours are only the kind of results of, the symptoms of, they're not the causes.
Yeah.
You know. So stopping somebody self-harming is about making them feel good about themselves. That's...
Yeah, it's not about taking away the knife or the scissors or whatever. It's about fixing the underlying issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, there was a girl on the plane that was coming back from Qatar. Interesting, Qatar. And her arms were just covered in scars, both her arms, right the way down. And she was wearing a short-sleeved thingy, like a singlet thing. And I was aware about how much, when I was working with self-harm, how people would cover up. And she was there with her arms on display, covered in scars, you could see.
Wow.
And one of them had a bandage on where she had a fresh cut.
Bet you were desperate to ask her.
No, I kept away.
Flipping egg. Wow.
Yeah.
I've got a few articles I'm going to link to, all kind of based around change and what it takes to change and why maybe we don't always change. What techniques do you use to kind of snap people out of?
You don't. You don't. It's like...
Does it work? Does pressure applying from our side or from your side, when you've got someone in your life that needs change, does it ever come from us, or...?
No, very often it makes it worse. That we demand other people change because they don't fit the way that we see the world should be. And we actually drive them further into the behaviours that we don't like.
Yeah.
So it has the reverse effect. Mm. And quite often you'll see that, where people don't like the way someone behaves or what they do. And they complain at them so much that they go and do it more rather than less. You know.
So what's the secret? What does Greta Thunberg need to be saying and doing? And what do we need to be saying to our friends and family who are you know, in a bit of trouble or are self-harming? How do we?
Well, if you accept that idea that people don't like change. Yeah, that it's better the devil that you know, even if that devil's quite difficult, at least you know where you stand.
Yep. Yeah.
The only way that people are going to change is if you show them something better than what they have in a realistic sense. So my thing about all the vegan people that we know shouting and screaming about it and protesting and all that kind of stuff, great, I'm sure it lets the steam out of their boiler. But it has the reverse effect. It doesn't actually change anything. The way that you stop people eating meat burgers is you create the most amazing vegan burger, so they wouldn't want to eat the meat burger. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
We know that if you give people negative messages, it has the reverse effect. So it's called Coué's law of reversed effort. We've talked about that before. And it's like, if you tell people they must stop burning and making CO2, and they must stop, people just react against it and do the opposite. Yeah, you have to show them the positive. The only way that the unconscious human mind, which is the bit that's controlling behaviour, changes, is that if you give it a positive message, it has to have a positive reason to change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think about how we get pissed off, disgruntled with our partners, our friends, politicians, other people, and it doesn't have any effect, does it?
No.
You know, you can go to war. The war doesn't change anything. It's the peace that changes things after the war, you know.
Blimey. There's a line in one of the articles on the psychologytoday.com. There's too much anxiety involved with change, too much uncertainty. So are people afraid of it as well?
No, it's disruption. It's like if you look at, there's something called the Holmes-Rahe scale, which is a psychology scale. That what are the most stressful things? Well, losing a partner is stressful, but in the top five is moving house. Do you want to move house? And what effect does that have on you emotionally, psychologically? So if you were to lose someone close to you to death, if you were to move house and move job or retire all at the same time, you're right on the way to cuckoo country and the Looney Tunes farm, you know, because you're up at that highest stress level.
Do you think we can talk about ourselves, but are certain people better at change? They're just kind of more open to it just through personality. Is that something that we've been born with, or is it...
Well, in the Ayurvedic world, you say that the yellow bit of the person, which is the Manipura part of the person, is the bit that engages in change. And if you've got strong Manipura, you love it. And if you don't, you hate it.
Yeah.
Some people are threatened by change. To me, jumping on a plane, going off on my own to Qatar or Abu Dhabi or Africa or whatever doesn't bother me. I love it. You know, and my experience of human beings is that most human beings are lovely people, and they're interested in you, you're interested in them, and you have a good gap, you know, wherever you are, the manner.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't find any of that a threat at all. Whereas there are other people that are terrified to go to the next town. We live on the Wirral, on the Insular Peninsula, and there are people that are terrified to leave the Wirral. You know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, no, I mean, I was thinking about... I consider myself as someone who's quite open to change and new experiences, but I had an opportunity with Beth and my missus, before we were married, actually, for a big life change, where... What's your coffee there? Little down in front of you, Jamba. Where Bethan completed a work placement in London, teaching... And she was offered a full-time job at this school in London, in West Ham, or that kind of way.
Oh, damn, West Ham.
And it would have been a huge life change, you know? And we had no kids, you know? I was still living at home. I'd finished uni, and I was living at home, my folks, I think. In fact, definitely was. And we had this big opportunity to go live in the big smoke and start this new life down there. And it was my main doing to say, no, I don't think that's the right thing for us, Lingy. I think we should settle up here in the northwest, on the Insular Peninsula. And who knows? I mean, it's worked out beautifully, obviously, with married and two great little kids, loads of family nearby and friends, etc. But who knows where, if we'd been living in London, what I'd be doing right now, you know?
It's what floats your boat. I don't think there's a right or a wrong. I mean, for me, to have lived and worked in other countries has been a good thing. Because those are experiences and things that you'd never ever experience in an everyday sense.
Yeah.
You know.
That's the idea.
Yeah.
I know. So, I mean, change for the sake of change, I mean, isn't necessarily a good thing if you kind of have.
Unless that's your driver.
Yeah.
If your driver's, oh, I'm bored, I need to do something different, let's change. It's like, I like going back to similar places on holiday. I like going back. I mean, you go to the caravan, do you? I like to go to the same place by the lakes in Italy.
Yep.
And if it's my birthday, I like to go to the Yorkshire Dales, to the same place, you know. Does that make me fixed? Or, you know, I don't mind going other places, but I like what I like.
Yep.
And I know what I like, so I enjoy doing it.
Mm.
Yeah. I guess the thing is that if your life is miserable and horrible, and then that's what you expect, and you don't expect change, then that becomes your normal, doesn't it?
Mm.
If life's a bitch and then you die, you know, life's hard, life is earnest.
Life is suffering, yeah.
Yeah.
Which a lot of spiritual, like certain religious teachings will teach you that life is suffering, you know.
But if you think about previous social structures where the blacksmith's son became the blacksmith, the idea that you would move on, change or develop, it wasn't there.
Mm.
There was continuity, consistency.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only recently that people have had mobility and could do stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, a generation or two ago, you wouldn't have had the option to go to London to work.
Mm.
You know, you'd have been where you were, that's it.
Yeah, yeah, you wouldn't have even thought of, yeah, expanding beyond that village or that town.
Whereas now, people go to other countries, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah,
quite easily. That might be something that we need to change, because our environmental obligations will not allow that kind of...
Do you mean you can't travel?
Massive reduction in air travel is probably what it's going to take. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are people ready for that change?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
And there's me flying out to Qatar all the time.
Yeah. I know. Well, we're lacking, but it might be that we can't take our car to Northumberland because petrol might be too expensive, because petrol needs to be, like, mega expensive, to be honest. Or certain trips. I don't know. I think about technology all the time, and, you know, a lot of car trips are mega short, like... less than a couple of kilometres, which is easily walked or cycled. So I try and think about how we can use technology to make trips like that too expensive.
So have you now gone against electric cars?
Yeah, I'm starting to, actually. I'm starting to swing against cars in general, just because I see them as really inefficient and damaging to communities. And, you know, like, that talk about how we don't know our neighbours very well anymore because we just swing our car into the driveway and get into the house.
Yep.
And I was delivering leaflets for a certain political party last week, helping out. They might have a green logo. That's a clue. I wanted to kind of see what it was like. And I was this kind of rough-ish part of Birkenhead,
right.
Delivering leaflets on these kind of little, you know, terraced streets. And I was struck. It was quite a nice day. Weather-wise, it was just the start of when that little heat wave hit. There were a lot of people in these terraced streets sitting on the walls, chatting to their neighbours.
Yeah.
And there were cars everywhere as well, parked on the road. But I was just thinking, you know, we could learn a lot in our leafy parts of the world from these guys, because they're all out. Their first instinct when the good weather came was to open the front doors, go out, sit on the wall and have a catch up with a neighbour. You tend not to see that in the parts of the world where I grew up.
Yeah. Yeah.
We just shut ourselves away.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need to change.
Yeah. You want to go to Qatar because people just live in towers.
Yeah.
And never see anybody.
Is there any kind of... Yeah, so where you were staying, was there any kind of social place where people go to?
There is a gym in the pool that some people use. But apart from that, it's the shopping malls. That's where people go.
Yeah.
Because they're air-conditioned. And the big Villaggio one has got canals in it and those boats that they have in Venice.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Lovely.
Gondolas, that's
it. Sounds real classy.
Yeah, yeah.
And tasteful.
Yeah, really glitzy.
You talk about 30 days. We haven't mentioned it in a while, but we're talking about routine and habits and building in new habits here, aren't we? It takes time.
It takes 30 days, yeah. To build a new circuit of neurons and dendrites in your brain,
yeah.
To accommodate new habits, new ways of thinking or being. But the key is you have to want to.
Mm.
And that's what this is about, isn't it? It's like what the lady was saying to you is that people don't want to change.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess when you look at someone who's going around the world trying to persuade parliaments to look at CO2 emissions and look, you're killing my generation, you know, if the parliament doesn't want to change and if our leader can't be asked to come and meet you, then you're on hiding to nothing in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But assuming you do want to change, and you kind of get that in that mindset where you're ready to go for it, you need a bit of persistence, don't you, and a bit of patience.
Persistence and consistency. We know that it takes you 90 days in all. If you are persistent and consistent for 90 days, you've cracked it, you've done it.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to maintain that, and if you don't, it doesn't happen. It doesn't work.
90 days, man, that's a lot. I mean, look, how many people will give up on day one or two or three?
Yep.
Thinking, and it's nowhere near enough, is it? You've got to stick at it a lot longer than that.
Yeah. And so the change takes effort. If you're doing something that you like, it doesn't take any effort at all. Now, if you want to do it, it's when you're doing something you don't really want to do. Someone's saying, come on, you fat bastard, you've got to come down the gym. And you're thinking, oh, I don't want to, you know.
Yeah.
And it takes you a good few weeks to get to that point where your body's going, no, feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it, you know.
Yeah.
You've got to get through those few weeks, first of all. Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to mention? Have you got a resource?
Yeah, no, my resource is, it's a wee website, which is, it's called The Possibility of Change. It's different ways to change your life. It's quite interesting.
Cool.
To have a read. Yeah.
I forgot to think of one, and I haven't, on the spot, I can't think of one.
Well, you haven't changed, have you?
I haven't changed. Yeah, same as every week. I'll just draw a line there. I will sum things up. So yeah, livingthepresent.co.uk for our show notes and links for this episode, and have a look at Sean's blog post as well. Sign up to our mailing list because Sean's got a book on the way.
Yeah, it's desperately nearly finished.
Nearly finished.
Yeah.
We need to do a cover for it soon, eh? To think about
it's getting
printing
sexy.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
Exciting. And we'll be back next week with more. Or do send us an email if there's anything you would like us to discuss. In fact, next week we've got a special guest on, I do believe.
All right, that will be very good.
Yeah, if you'd like to come on the show as well, drop us an email because we're always looking for guests and people doing some good work out there.
Yeah, we'll make a change, isn't it?
Yeah, be a nice change. Just the two of us. All right, Sean, have a good week.
And you.
See you later.
Bye.